MP. The first one is really just an update for your benefit and the public's in terms of the work the PDT has been doing on updating the biomass estimates for Elephant Trunk and Delmarva. The second is just a review of timelines. There are a growing number of actions that we're working on the SCALP committee, and I wanted to update you about some shifts going on and some different things that have been going on. And the last thing is to consider a motion from the last SCALP committee related to a request for analysis to be prepared by the Science Center. So to start with the first topic, please take out document number 5. 5 different documents were handed out related to today's agenda items. The first one, if you recall, in Framework 19, a rulemaking procedure was adopted under that action that gives the regional administrator the authority to reduce the number of trips in Elephant Trunk and or Delmarva if the exploitable biomass estimated for those areas are considerably lower than originally projected. We have included this type of a provision in the last 2 frameworks that the council has approved, and the intent of them really is that when we do these biennial frameworks, we have to use data from one fishing year to project allocations several years in the future. So the idea is that when we have available data in surveys in between those years, that we would want to adjust allocations if necessary, basically if the biomass we didn't expect would be able to provide that much catch without causing any problems, we would want to reduce allocations. Now, we did all of this work up front, and different biomass triggers were identified that if updated estimates, for example, in Table 1 in Document Number 5, if the overall estimate for a particular access area was below a certain threshold, automatically the number of trips would be reduced for that access area. This year in particular, we were fortunate to be able to use 3 different sources of data. We had the federal dredge survey that the Science Center conducts. We had a commercial dredge survey from Virginia Institute of Marine Science, and we also had a video survey from SMAS for these 2 areas in particular. These are the only 2 access areas that have this type of procedure. And again, today I'm going to review the results from those different surveys individually and also when they were combined. But again, no council action is required today. This is just for your benefit, kind of an update. This information would then be forwarded directly to the regional administrator. But to jump right to it, the 3 different surveys, if you turn the page onto Table 2, you'll see that each survey did have a different estimate of exploitable biomass for the 2 different access areas. However, the results between the 3 different surveys were not statistically significant. So while they do, some are higher or lower for a particular area, they were still within a range that was statistically acceptable. In addition to providing the 3 different estimates, the PDT then folded all 3 of them together. And they were combined not in a kind of the accepted way when you combine results from surveys of different methods. You use a inverse variance weighted mean. And essentially, you combine the different estimates for the different areas, and you weight them based on their standard error or variance. So in general, the survey with the lowest variance would be weighted the most. So when you combine, for example, for Elephant Trunk, the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, and the difference there in the Table 2 is their traditional stations, and then there's also an extended, if you see that row. The Science Center has recognized that there's more biomass west of their traditional survey strata. So they have included a number of additional stations west of that strata, and that biomass estimate is the result of the extended stations. So when you combine the federal survey with the SMAS survey and the VIMS survey, and then you weight them based on their individual variances, for Elephant Trunk, you get an overall estimate of 32,102, which is above the 30,000 metric ton threshold, which would require a reduction in trips. So when all surveys, we are very fortunate that we were able to have 3 different surveys. If you see, if we just use one, in both cases, we might be in a situation to reduce the number of trips. However, having all 3 makes this estimate more robust and so forth, and we are still above that threshold, so technically there would be no need to reduce the number of trips for Elephant Trunk. Similarly, for Delmarva, if you go over a little bit further to the right in Table 2, there were three different estimates. Again, the Science Center Extended Strata, the SMAS Video Survey, and Virginia Institute of Marine Science. These three results were combined in the same method, and the overall estimate was 11,130 metric tons. The threshold for Delmarva was 10,000 metric tons. So again, the biomass we're expecting, based on this new year of data, to be sufficient to provide enough catch for the allocations in 2009. The Scala PDT met on September 29th to discuss all of this and put this memo together. We did attach the minutes from the PDT meeting to this memo. You'll see just in the next few pages a more detailed summary of the different things that were discussed. There were, I would say, different feedbacks and issues discussed about yellowtail flounder and potential impacts on future years in terms of access area allocations. But again, all of those things would be further discussed in future frameworks when we work on them. So in a nutshell, this report from the PDT would then be forwarded to the regional administrator, and at this time no action is required, and all 2009 access area allocations would remain the same. That's all I have for this topic.
Any discussions or questions for D? Okay.
Great. Okay, moving on to the next agenda item is really, again, just an update and discussion about timelines. If you could take out document number one. This document was prepared after the recent SCALLOP committee meeting, and essentially it's a response when I got back to the office and kind of updated Paul about all the different alternatives that are currently in Amendment 15 and all the different actions that are going on for the next few years. I would say there wasn't panic, but we're starting to get a little uncomfortable with the amount of alternatives that are getting in Amendment 15, the amount of analysis required, the different review times. And so this document is more of an update for the rest of the council to appreciate that for people outside of the SCALLOP committee and also to help us for future planning in the next few years. So on the first page of this document is just a summary of the different actions that will most likely need to happen in the SCALLOP FMP in the next few years. There are two different timelines presented for Amendment 15, and the reason for that, we are most likely, pretty much definitely at this point, going to need to slide the Amendment 15 timeline back several months. The PDT and the committee has been working on, for the council, a discussion document basically in response to the turtle biological opinion that was recently completed by the National Marine Fisheries Service. The committee and PDT need more time, and so that will be discussed at the November council meeting. But essentially, result of that is that we've been spending a lot of PDT resources and committee resources on that, taking away from work we need to do for Amendment 15. So these few months are going to push out that amendment a little further than probably we would have liked. I also want to point out in the first page of this document, the original intent when we first started Amendment 15 was to actually include the detailed specifications for fishing year 2011, and the idea there was to not have so many scallop actions going on at the same time. So we figured we would set up this major amendment, we would have the ACL structure in place, and at the same time we would actually include the different fishery specifications for that fishing year so we didn't have to do another action right after that. However, it's becoming more and more unrealistic that can actually happen. Now that the document's starting to come together, we realize with the different times when we have to get that document out for public hearings, we are going to be so far ahead from when we'll have the survey information we need to set days at sea and access area allocations for that fishing year. So the approach right now, we'll talk about this more at the committee level most likely, but the idea probably that will be the most clean, straightforward way to do it would be similar to what's going on with groundfish, you set up the ACL structure in this major amendment, and then very soon after it, you have another framework that actually sets the days at sea and access area allocations based on more recent information. So that would be something we would want to clarify in this amendment moving forward, that we would actually need to do a separate framework down the line. The second thing I just want to point out about this document is there are some serious concerns that a lot of the major milestones for these various actions are potentially going to happen at the same time. There's going to be a lot of overlap of when analysis needs to be done on different actions and when the agency needs to approve and get things implemented. And I just wanted to get these things out as soon as possible so that issues could be raised and we could adjust things while there's still time. The last thing in kind of relation to that is looking at Amendment 15 after the last committee meeting, there are still several alternatives that are not fully developed. And they need a lot more work, some more than others, and some of them, frankly, are not very supported by the scoping comments that we've heard about this amendment, basically the sense we're hearing from the public about things that people would even want to see selected for this action. So this next part of the memo of Document 1, sort of the bottom half of it, in talking with Paul in the office, it identifies a few of the alternatives, the three of them specifically, that still need more development in this amendment. Originally, we were trying to bring this amendment to the council in November, fully developed for your approval so we could start analyzing it. That's been slid back, as you'll see from the timeline on the reverse side, to February, which does buy us a little bit more time to work on some of these things, but not, you know, it's a two-month, basically, addition. And the three that are listed here specifically for different reasons either didn't have a lot of support during scoping or any of the meetings that we've had so far, and some of them require quite a bit of analysis. For example, the first one is with related to stacking. We have one alternative that would limit stacking to two permits, and then we have another alternative that would have no restriction on the number of stacking permits, basically unlimited. This is an alternative, as an example, that would require a lot more analysis. If we left it in the document, we'd have to go through kind of more worst case if you put four permits on one vessel and so forth. And we haven't heard from the public really much support for this option. So leaving it in the document, while it could be helpful for comparing impacts, it certainly is something that is an addition in terms of the timeline now that we have all these timeline concerns. The second one would be an IFQ program. Again, we did scope for this topic. There was not a huge amount of support, really, if there was some, to consider it, but we still haven't heard in these developing months a whole lot of push to continue working on this type of a strategy. And really, at the committee level, we haven't put up our sleeves and really gotten into all the details that would be necessary. So I think if we want to keep it in the document, we really should recognize that up front, that that alternative still needs a lot more work in terms of development, regardless of all of the potential additions and timelines in terms of referendums and so forth, which we're still not sure what that really involves. The third one is an idea that came up in the earlier stages of development for Amendment 15, and it's an alternative to really convert open area days at sea and get rid of that structure and actually allocate vessels completely in a number of trips, and each trip would have a possession limit. And this alternative, I think people have a lot of interest in continuing to explore and seeing what the different ideas could really come out of it. But again, it's an alternative that needs still a lot of work, and there are some concerns that this would trigger the same IFQ requirements, because essentially you would be allocating the majority of the fishery, almost all of it, in number of trips with poundage. We are in the process, I understand, of getting legal advice formally from the agency about whether or not this would qualify as that type of an alternative or not. The last committee meeting, we were pretty sure that it would, but again, not completely formally. So I don't mean to go into too much detail about these. It's still within the committee level to continue developing these, but these are certainly three alternatives that need a lot more work, and the committee, if the council agrees, the document is certainly starting to get pretty large, and we may want to seriously revisit some of these things at our next committee meeting. So That's all I was going to say about that. The alternative timelines are on the back page of this. You can see the major milestones when this council's expected to do certain things. I think it's pretty realistic to assume that we're under the Amendment 15 longer development timeline, which shifts things down several months in terms of the major council milestones. But again, still enough room in there, hopefully, to get things in place in time for the March 1, 2011 deadline in terms of the new Magnuson Act ACL requirements. And then the other framework actions and so forth are listed in the other columns to the right.
Dave.
All right. To Deirdre's point about the congestion and the timeline, I have a motion that I think Karen has already. And it's effectively, while it's coming up, it's effectively to for the council to direct the Scallop Oversight Committee to seriously consider the list of items that Deirdre mentioned, as well as all other alternatives that could impact the timing of the action. That is the alternative that would place no restriction on the number of permits that can be stacked on one limited access vessel, the IFQ program for the limited access fishery, and the idea of converting open area days at sea into access area trips in open areas. This isn't so much a comment on the merits of some of these, but more the merits, understanding we do have some time constraints here. We need to get those ACLs and AMs in. We need to deal with overfishing definitions. It's simply an acknowledgement of the amount of work that has to be done and the amount of time available. And as Deirdre mentioned, some of these haven't gotten a tremendous amount of support, shall we say, from the public when it's come up. The third one is a relatively new idea. I personally think there's some merit to that. It's just a matter of the timing of it. When can we get to it? There's also some issues of whether that is in effect a de facto IFQ, and does it trigger all of everything that comes with that. So I don't know if it's – can we get that motion out? Okay. So that's not a – well, we'll wait till it gets up so that I can get a second. Thank you, Karen and Chris.
Is there a second? Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Anything further, Dave?
No, that's it, unless there were some questions from the council members on this.
Anyone on the council?
Yeah, we had asked, I don't know whether he wants to comment on it, but we had asked Gene at the time how close we're dancing to an IFQ with that third one.
Sally.
It's tough for me to see some of the best alternatives already potentially on the chopping block or being considered for the chopping block. It's also tough for me to hear when we consider something that either is clearly an ITQ or maybe something close enough to an ITQ, alternative number three that's up there, that by default means that we can't do it because that's not the case. There's a very high bar that, unfortunately, Magnuson sets for this region if we're going to implement any kind of ITQ system. But Magnuson doesn't say you can't do it. The other thing is I think that, and I know Dave said he didn't want to have a discussion on the merits of these, but that's kind of the point here of whether these have value in further exploring or not. And we haven't even, as Deirdre pointed out, the committee hasn't even had a chance to flesh out some of the major issues that people raise as potential valid concerns with going in this direction with the fishery to even know if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing or neutral for them as individual business owners, much less the fishery as a whole. So I'm not going to support this motion. You know, if this ends up going back to the scallop committee, I certainly hope that the committee gives full consideration of what these alternatives really could mean for the fishery, even given the limitations of the timeline that we have, given the more pressing need, legal need to address the biological opinion for the sea turtles. So thank you.
Since Sally mentioned the turtles, another thing that the committee and the council might want to think about is that the last shot that the PDT works on this reasonable and prudent measures for sea turtles is the November council meeting. Whatever they bring forward in November, the council either accepts it or rejects it, and then that's the end of it, because we've got 18 months to do Amendment 15 with ACLs, AMs, and everything else in there. And we've got to get off of something that we weren't planning on doing. So we ought to think about November is the meeting for the reasonable and prudent measures for turtles, and then if it isn't accepted then the service would have to do something under ESA or something like that. But we can't spend more time on it after November.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, this is a motion from the committee chair, but not acting as the chair. This is not a specific motion from the committee itself. All right. The timelines that Deidre has described for us, were these timelines known to the scholar committee when it met back on September 10 and 11? And if they were known, why didn't the scholar committee address this issue at that time?
I think we've always known we had some pretty tight time constraints, but as Paul just alluded to, we've kind of been busy with, I won't use other adjectives, busy with the turtle biological opinion. That was something that we didn't see coming. It obviously has important implications for the fishery, and so we and the PDT ended up spending quite a bit of time that would have been spent developing ACLs and AMs on the turtle issue.
Okay, so it seems that many of these issues were discussed, perhaps at length, by the scholar committee back on September 10 and 11, with the anticipation that the amendment would have these particular issues or alternatives within it. My understanding now is that the chair, as well as staff working together, has concluded that the committee is going to have to be directed to rethink some of this and to remove some of the alternatives after further reflection by the committee. If that's the way in which this has evolved, then fine enough. I'll certainly be guided by the chair and by the staff.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Sally made a number of good points, but I look at this motion as very clearly instructing the committee to consider the alternatives and work within the timeline. We have the tendency to overload every amendment we set forward, and I'm afraid to give each of these issues the time that they deserve to fully develop and think through, there's not a snowball's chance that we'd be able to pull it off within the timetable we have ahead of us.
Anything further from the council? Dave Gaither.
I have two questions. One is to the motion itself. Are we sending this back to the committee to discuss these? I mean, why do we have to? There's another month wasted. Why don't we just do it today? The council says this is what we're going to do, yay or nay, and be done with it. That would be my first question. And the second question is on, we had some discussion at the Habitat Committee last week about problems with scallop issues related to habitat that are going to occur if Amendment 15 and the Habitat Omnibus Amendment don't line up right time-wise. And I wonder if we should have a discussion about that as well right now.
Deirdre or Paul, you want to address the second issue, which is how does this amendment line up with the Habitat Omnibus Amendment? Are we still on track?
I might have to talk to David Preble. I have not been able to talk to Chad. I have heard through the grapevine that that timeline is also falling back as well. I believe the expected final action for the phase two is still before when the council is expected to make selection of preferred alternatives. We have it for September of 2009 for this amendment, and I understand that the phase two is still before that. So if we know before we go out to public hearings that that is still on track, then we can pull out any of the EFH-related measures that are in the SCALP amendment. But again, I think that meeting was just last week. I'm not positive about that.
Yeah, Deidre, I don't have the timeline in front of me. We made some alterations in it that will put us a little behind, but I believe that we're pretty much on track right now, schedule-wise.
Dave, to your first point, you're certainly free to make a motion to amend this motion if you'd like to generate some discussion. But just on the message that, to my way of seeing things, the message that we're being given from the committee and the staff is that this amendment is overloaded, and in order to meet timeline requirements, something or several things need to be removed from the amendment. Or we risk not being able to complete the amendment on time. Deirdre.
Thanks, John. I'll just add to that and to respond to what Dr. Pierce was kind of, I think, alluding to before also, is that, yes, the committee saw this timeline at our last meeting, but a message I heard very loud at the committee meeting was that the PDT and the committee need to get off a lot of the things we're working on, and that specifically is the turtle issue and also a lot of the stacking and consolidation alternatives we've been very busy with, because we have left the ACLs essentially alone, and we need to spend a lot more time, committee time, PDT time, on that. That's the number one priority for this amendment. That's the driving force of the timelines, and, you know, we need to start focusing on that. So after that meeting, this was an attempt, David and I, to identify the alternatives that are still left that would, you know, take time away from that ACL priority.
Okay. In light of the discussion we're having, it's quite clear to me that those three items alone could take 5 years, at least. And that's being charitable, quite frankly. Those are hugely contentious issues. So I'd make a motion to basically strike the whole first part of number four there, and that the council remove those three items today. That would be my motion. That the council remove the restriction on the number of permits that can be, to remove them from the document. The council will not consider restriction on the number of permits that can be stacked, will not consider an IFQ program, and will not convert open area days at sea into access area trips in open areas in Amendment 15 or Frameworks 21 and 22.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dana Rice. Dave, just so I understand, what you're saying is instead of kicking it back to the committee, you're suggesting that today the council should just strike those three items from the draft amendment.
That's correct. To save a month of time in another committee meeting to discuss the same thing we're discussing right now. That we just, you know, either the council does it or doesn't do it, and let's get on with it.
Discussion on the motion to amend. Dr. Pierce.
So basically, this is a motion to substitute, I assume, because the way it's worded right now, we end up with some text in the motion that's no longer relevant. So this would be a motion to substitute, I assume, to just remove those three issues from consideration in the amendment, correct? Because the way it's worded right now, we're just substituting some language. Whatever, Mr. Chairman, however way you wish to.
Well, that's what it says, David, the move to substitute.
You clear, Dave? Okay. Sally McGee?
Yeah, this motion doesn't make any sense to be pulling the plug prematurely. I mean, I understand that we can say, yeah, these things are going to take a long time to develop, but if we don't even understand what the potential pros and cons are of these approaches, then we're not doing due diligence, I'd say. So I'm going to strongly oppose this. I think the only one of these three that I think the council can say right now would make sense to get rid of, because we have had some committee deliberation on, is number one. We've had some discussion about how much consolidation to allow. The other two, we haven't had adequate time to even consider, especially number three. That's something that came from industry. It's an idea that has a lot of merit, as the chair of the committee pointed out. And if we're pulling the plug on that before it even gets out of the gate, before the committee even has a chance to discuss it, because we've been spending all of our time talking about turtles at the committee level, haven't even had a chance to look at this, then we're not doing right by the industry. So I strongly oppose this motion.
Paul Howard.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask Pat Kirkle. I don't recall if the proposed rule for IFQ referendum, whether to include crew or the whole proposal for IFQ referendums, has the final rule been published on that? And if not, when might we get that?
No, the final rule hasn't been published yet. And Sam would know better than me, but I think we're targeting by the first of the year, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Anyone else on the council? Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also do not support this motion for many of the reasons that Sally has already stated. There is an obvious need for the committee and the council to prioritize the actions that are going to be in the amendment, but to just, strike all three of these without full discussion, I think, is premature.
Jim Arvin.
Yes, I'm opposed to this motion to substitute, and I'd like to amend the substitute motion to read strike items one, period.
Seconded by Sally McGee. Discussion? Jim Arthur.
Yeah, I just wanted to put a little rationale to that. I think that the committee needs to deliberate number two and three. I point out that we did an IFQ system for roughly 1,000 votes under scallops in a relatively short period of time. So I'm not sure that the time constraints for an IFQ system as been discussed, are justified, and I'd like to have the committee debate that and come back with a recommendation to the council, and that's the justification for my substitute motion.
Just a point of clarification, not debating the merits of the motion, but just from the chair's perspective. But one of the differences, I think, between the IFQ that went through on general category and this is that there was not the requirement for the referendum. But other than that, okay. Anything further from the council? Pat Kirkle.
I'm with some discomfort going to support the motion to amend the motion to substitute to the main motion. I don't think that if the council voted for any kind of LAP type program that you would be able to do a referendum and implement the ACLs and AMs by the required time in the Magnuson Act. So I don't see how those fit together very well. But I do think that this is an ideal fishery for LAPs in the council, that we should be moving towards some sort of dedicated access program for this fishery. And so I think I would like to see the committee at least have the discussion about whether to try to pursue this or not. And perhaps one of the options is, if they decide to pursue it, to continue the development of the ACLs and the AMs and then split this off so that the ACLs and the AMs could be implemented in time, but that you could could continue to discuss some alternative program.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I favor sending it back to the committee, if for no other reason than we manage scholarships in concert with the Mid-Atlantic Council. That is, there are Mid-Atlantic Council members in the scholarship committee, and they've had a lot to say over the years, and certainly they were they participated at the September 10 and 11 meeting. Therefore, to have us as a New England Council strike these out without having Mid-Atlantic Council involvement through their membership on the scholarship committee, I think would be ill-advised. So the committee should have another shot at this.
Thanks for that perspective, Dr. Pierce. Pat Augustine, I'd ask that when you give your report next week to the MID that you duly note that Dr. Pierce was looking out for the Mid-Atlantic.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Anyone else? Dave Gatham.
Yeah, again, I'm looking at the document number one here and what has to be done in these Amendment 15, Framework 21, and Framework 22, and the timelines, and I don't see the time to do these things. I'm sorry, I just don't see it. And the longer we delay the inevitable, I think the more time is going to be wasted by staff on doing something that ultimately is not going to get done in this amendment anyway, which means they're not going to be doing what has to get done. And what has to get done is setting specifications and stuff. You know, so, I mean, the council can do as it will, but I think we need some firm leadership today.
Jim Allen.
Yeah, I have just one more comment, and that is that it seems to me that to develop ACLs and AMs for scallops should not really be that difficult for the PDT to develop. It's a single species. It's not overfished, and I think, you know, it may not take that long to do that, and that these other things could move along at the least in parallel. So, again, with that said, I think the committee needs to debate this and come back with some recommendations to us. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. There is no support in industry for items 1 and 2. That was made clear very early on in scoping. I have a question regarding elimination of these two items. Is a rationale acceptable that the council doesn't have time? Is that an acceptable rationale if you move these to the considered but rejected, or is it just... How are you going to reject them?
Well, I believe the debate's centered around the fact that the issue of time is a constraining factor.
So if, in fact, the council votes to eliminate numbers 1 and 2, the rationale would be just don't have time to develop them, and that's why it's moved from considered but rejected?
Well, right now it would just... eliminate number one.
I know. I'm just saying from an industry perspective, 1 and 2 have no support. From day one through all the deliberations from scoping to now, there's been no support, primarily because we thought it would bog down the amendment. Item 3, I came up with, and it was not that I was supporting it, but I was concerned about AMs. And the question I would have would, what would be a potential AM for an open area scallop day at sea? And not knowing what that would be, I would like to have something available in case it comes down to be some onerous measure. And so that's why that was there. And it came up, that came up at the last minute because of the concern about there was no discussion on ACLs or AMs up to the last meeting, and that's why that's there. So I would say that you would save a lot of time right now getting rid of 1 and 2 if, in fact, it's acceptable that a rationale that you don't have time to consider it and there's too many factors and what have you, no public support for item 1. But number 3, I think, is something that should hang around until we know what the ACL AMs are. Thank you.
Paul Howard.
Basically, I was going to mention to Ron that at the February council meeting is when we decided on, I think there were 8 issues, and we had a lengthy debate in February about what would be included in Amendment 15. So the merits of what's in there, you know, the types of alternatives to consider in scoping, we developed those and approved those at length in the February council meeting. So, you know, we're not going to. And right now, we've had the debate about the pros and cons of including them back in February. Am I right, Dee?
I think it could have even been earlier.
Anyone else in the audience? Jeff Pike.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Pike. I'm here today on behalf of the Scallop Capacity Reduction Coalition, representing vessel owners that own over 100 of the full-time permits and invested hundreds of millions of dollars in this fishery. And because capacity reduction was the number 2 priority in the Amendment 15, we would hope that you would not follow the path that Pat perhaps suggested about just doing AMs and ACLs and doing something else beforehand, particularly in this very tough economic time. As you can appreciate, mortgages, loans to the fishing industry, it's going to be very tough. And I think trying to improve the overall efficiency of the industry is a valid and right goal. I wanted to address the motion with respect to the no restrictions on number of permits that could be stacked. Ron was right, both in scoping and at every advisors and committee meeting, there was no support, and certainly not within our group, to be able to stack more than 2 permits on one vessel. So I think, as the chairman had suggested, that's an appropriate measure to be dropped. With respect to the IFQ program, while many of our members would like to see that, there are the final rules, as been noted, have not been promulgated. We don't know how long that would take, and we're very concerned that going to an IFQ program in this amendment would delay it significantly, and therefore we would support removing that. On the third area, that convert the open days into trips, we haven't taken a position on this, but we supported it being included in the document and analyzed because we thought that it might address the AMs and ACLs in a convenient way. And when the issue was brought up at the last committee meeting, the legal advice that we received was in response to whether or not this essentially was an IFQ and therefore required a referendum and all the other accoutrements that come along with that now. I think the quote was, if it quacks like a duck or looks like a duck, it might be a duck or something like that. Gene, is that right? So what we would like to do is at least receive that refined legal advice to be able to determine whether or not it would, in fact, kick in, and therefore you would inherit those delays that would come along with creating an IFQ program. If the council and committee is interested in eliminating other things, there's an item in the document 3.3.2.5, sideboards for bycatch. This is under the stacking provision, and since there is consensus at the advisors and at the committee that if a vessel was going to stack, all the permits from a vessel would need to be stacked and moved to another vessel. So, in essence, you would have a naked vessel without any permits left. We don't think that there's a need to analyze or sideboards for bycatch, since that would be a non-permitted vessel. So that's one additional measure that you could perhaps take out that would not require analysis. Anyway, perhaps it might be prudent at least to wait till the committee or the council gets the legal advice with respect to number 3 before the council moves to delete it altogether. Thank you.
Jim Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. You've already pretty much heard from industry as far as what they believe on items one and two. Question I would have, depending how the motion goes, whether the substitute or the amended motion is adopted, if all three items are stricken from the document, what would be the council's intent following that, or would it be silent on it at this point, or would it have will it take a position on adopting it later and discussing it later in a further amendment or framework, or is that yet undecided or unknown, or has anyone made any decisions on that?
You're asking if those, if the three items were to be removed from the document, what would happen to them?
What is their future? Yeah. What's the?
Well, they could come up in a future action, but they would be removed from this amendment.
Well, I know they always can, but is there any intent to bring them back at a few? In other words, are you remaining silent on that issue? Just to remove them with no further description of what you intend to do.
Well, I'm
in other words, it's not being tabled.
No. If they're out for now. They can always come back, as you stated.
And like I say, with no predetermined intent or consideration for bringing them back at a future date.
I haven't heard any expressed, no.
All right. My main issue deals with item three, convert the open areas into the access area trips. What you've already heard, in essence, is basically allocating IFQ to the industry, because every trip would be a predetermined rate of harvest. Now you have an IFQ program that's not based on any history from any of the vessels, from their past history or their past landings. Isn't this a indirect way of getting into the IFQ?
I'll turn to the committee chair. I haven't taken part in any of the discussions on that point.
Well, I mean, it's obvious that you've been around the process long enough to know that if all the harvest of the resource is allocated to each boat individually based on a trip into an area, and that's the only trips you can make, then it's like it was said, somebody's quacking out there.
I don't have an answer for you, Jim.
Well, then the question I have is, wasn't that supposed to be drawn up through a referendum on IFQs and consolidation? And now we're getting to it in a roundabout way?
I'll turn to Gene, Jim. I wasn't part of the discussion. I don't know.
Well, then how is an industry, if we do feel that way, and right now I'm speaking for myself because I haven't asked anyone whether they are really pro or con for that, but in my own opinion on this, how would someone oppose this if that is the case and they start discussing setting trip limits for the open access area, in essence making it an IFQ?
What's your question? How is it not an IFQ?
The question is how do we get back to where we're supposed to be when dealing with IFQs if you're going to adopt this method of putting an IFQ in place?
I'm not being funny. I really don't understand.
Oh, maybe you don't. Maybe I'm not. I'm being a little bit obtuse myself, maybe. But in essence, IFQs, at least in my mind's eye, has always been based on previous history of a vessel or a permit. And then we would go to the service and we would look back at our past history, and the IFQs would be allocated based on some formulation of that past history. This is a way of getting around it. This is based on the AMs or the ACLs forgetting about past history. I think that needs to be a concern if we're going to still call it IFQs.
Yeah, I'm sure that if this were to go back to the committee, if it goes back to the committee, that issue would come up at the committee. That discussion would come up at the committee. And an answer to your questions would need to be available to you and everyone else before we could take action on something like that. But
well, the
my understanding of this, of number three, is that it's not a guarantee to the scallops. It's a limit.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
It's not a guarantee to a certain amount of scallops. It's a limit on how many scallops would be available on a trip-by-trip basis, which is similar to if you look at groundfish, you have a certain amount of days at sea, and you have trip limits associated with those days at sea. So it's somewhat different than an ITQ. But your point is well taken, and I don't think the council needs to get into a full debate about the pros and cons and whether or not it is or is not an ITQ right now, especially since we don't have the final rule on the ITQ language for Magnuson, and especially since the motion on the board doesn't contemplate removing it from discussion. Right now, the only motion, the only point that's going to be removed with this motion on the board is the restriction on the number of permits that can be stacked on a vessel.
All right. However, like I say, my question still remains. I hope that there will be an answer forthcoming. And just to show that, you know, how convoluted these whole discussions become, I was speaking of IFQs. You responded in ITQs. And, you know, we're worlds apart on this, and I think there needs to be some more development and people aware of what we're trying to develop before we even move ahead. So that's my concern, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for allowing me to speak on that issue.
Thanks, Jim. I agree. We were just having a convoluted discussion. Gentleman in the back.
Members of the council. My name is Kirk DeBain, and I came all the way from Florida just to participate in this discussion and to be heard by the board. I think that we should, you know, the board should take into consideration that there's a lot of impact here from an economical standpoint, that it can cause unemployment, and if we make a rash decision as to removing it without even considering going forward and to look into the situation, then I feel as though, you know, it's all a part of a breakdown in infrastructure. So I would recommend that the board just take it into consideration as to the decision they make today. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience? Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Paul Wekesa. I have three scallop boats, and I definitely would be in favor of removing at least the first two things from the thing. And as I showed you all before, I had 62 individual permit holders, meaning 62 people that hold permits. Mr. Pike alluded to that he has 100 permit holders that he represents. That's not 100 individuals that hold permits. It's 100 permits, and you'll find that the majority of are held by 3 to 4 individuals. I have 62 individuals here, some of them who hold multiple permits, that are against any type of stacking of permits or any type of IFQ programs. And I'd just ask that those people be heard. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Is it Harriet?
Harriet Diedrichson, Port of New Bedford. I feel in light of what Deidre's saying about the time frame and that in these economic times, to make these kind of drastic changes quickly or without having time is going to make problems in the ports. We know for a fact there's going to be more unemployment. So when we talk about what's going on in the country today, where the unemployment number just went up last week, I think that this is something that it's not life or death. This doesn't have to happen. We're viable. I have one boat. I'm viable. I'm sure these other people are viable. There were years when we weren't viable and we didn't want it. So I think that this can come off the table. It can all, if there's another amendment later, but I don't think at this time it's pressing. You said what the real amendment was about was the AMs, the ACLs that's coming from the new Magnuson, and otherwise we wouldn't have needed an amendment. So with the workload and everything considered, I think it should be taken off the agenda and move forward on the things that are necessary. I am concerned about the communities. I'm concerned about the unemployment. I'm concerned about the foreseen things that this would bring and the unforeseen things we don't know about. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Where are we? We've got a motion to substitute, to strike number one, item one from draft amendment 15. Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. After listening to the discussion around the table and from the audience, I'd like to ask the maker of the motion if he would consider it a friendly to strike item one and two.
I wouldn't consider that a friendly.
Well, I'd like to make a motion substitute.
We're on our second substitute. Yeah, I'm going to have to play this out. Can't substitute a substitute substitute. So, anything further? You ready for the question? Mary Beth?
So, could you just clarify, we're now going to vote on whether to accept the substitute for the substitute as the main motion?
No.
No?
Right. We had the main motion, then there was a motion to substitute, and I believe that's not a motion to substitute the substitute, it's a motion to amend the substitute motion. Karen? So, right. So we're amending the motion to substitute. So if this passes, then that becomes the motion to substitute.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Is everyone clear? Okay. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Twelve. Opposed? Three. Abstentions? Four. Four opposed. Any abstentions? No. Motion to amend. The substitute motion carries 12 to 4. Now it's the main motion to amend. Motion to substitute. Sorry. Now I'm confused. Anything further?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the only thing is, yeah. Go ahead.
Now you can make a motion to amend this, Terry, if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So moved. I'd like to make a motion to amend to strike item 2 from draft amendment 15.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dana Rice. Discussion?
One and two or just two?
One and two.
To add two, right? Okay. Dave Simpson.
This may sound like mere formality, but I think it's more than that. The original motion was to refer this issue, which there's obviously a lot of strong feelings about and a lot of importance here, back to the committee to consider seriously and weigh its importance against the available time and so forth. And I'm a little bit concerned that if we strike too much of this, that it sends a signal that we don't necessarily want to send, that we're rejecting an IFQ concept here. I know that's not how everyone feels, but I'm concerned about the perception of that, and for that reason, I'm going to oppose the motion, because I think it's more appropriate that the Oversight Committee weigh this again against what else has to be done in the time frame, and then come back to the full council with a recommendation on whether this can be done in the available time or not.
Dave Gadel.
I'm in favor of the motion. I think it's pretty clear to everybody that we don't even have the rules for a referenda yet. And you know, we're just not – these timelines just don't mesh. Whether you believe in IFQs, ITQs, or you don't believe in them, you still have to have a referenda. I think if you send number three back to the committee, there's one committee meeting right there where they're going to wrestle ducks and skunks and chickens and everything else to the ground, trying to figure out whether it is or it isn't part of something that's going to need a referenda. For that reason alone, I think, just sending three back will give everybody plenty to argue over. I don't think two is even a starter in this timeline. I don't think you could hold a referendum in the time you got left.
Anything further from the council? Rodney.
Yeah, but this is just to send it back to the committee. If the committee figures they can't do it, they could strike it and then come back to the full council. Correct?
Right.
No? Wait a minute.
This is for the council to strike.
Okay.
If you vote positive here, you're saying I don't want an IQ program developed in this amendment. Anything further from the council? Pat. Yeah.
The substitute.
We're amending the substitute.
Same thing we did last
week. We're doing it convoluted, as Jim Kendall said. It's convoluted, but. Is everyone clear? If you vote yes, you're saying that I want to remove one and two from further consideration in the amendment. Okay, ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Six, opposed. Ten. Motion fails.
Now we're on the motion
to substitute. Amended substitute motion. So now we have to vote on this to make this the main motion, and then we have to vote on the main motion, right?
Well, yeah, this makes it the main substitute motion.
Right. Okay, so we're back to voting on. Let's take a 5-minute break. Okay. So we're back on the board, and we have the main motion as substituted, which we need to vote on. And if this motion is voted positively, in other words, if the council votes in favor of this main motion as substituted, then we have to take one more vote. So we've got our process cleared up. So the main motion is substituted is to strike item one from the list. Everybody clear on that? Okay. Dave Simpson.
And it would be silent on two and three.
Two and three would go back to the committee.
It would by this motion?
Yes.
Voting for this?
Yes.
Two and three would go back to the committee. Okay.
Right. Essentially, this takes the motion you originally put up on the board and strikes one out of the document. Therefore, two and three are still part of the motion. They would go back to the committee for consideration. It's an important point. Thanks, Dave. Is everybody ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Thirteen in favor. Opposed? Three. Abstentions? Motion carries 13-3. Now it's the main motion. It requires a vote.
Let's read it first.
Yeah, we'll read it first. Everybody read that. Is everybody comfortable with the language on the board? D.
Just really quickly, I think it's clear that this is also, should we add to it that it's striking number one from the amendment?
Any objection to including that language? Shouldn't be. We just voted multiple times on it. Jim Odlin.
Just have a question of the committee chair, I believe, since this originally was his motion a long time ago, that Pat mentioned that if you came up against something, for instance, that the IFQ program couldn't be implemented in a timely manner, that maybe we could consider a parallel action. And I was wondering if that would be under the purview of the committee to come back with that kind of recommendation, or are we asking the committee just to say, yes, we can do it in this action, or no, we can't?
No, I would. My read on that question, Jim, would be that we're asking them to seriously consider the ability to get one or two of these items, these two items, done in this amendment. And if not, I think it's completely within bounds for the committee to come back to the council and say, no, but we had some really good deliberation and we recommend the following. It's certainly an acceptable course. Paul Howard?
Just for council members that might have some expectations about when things that fall out would be put back in, if you look at the timeline, be working on Amendment 15 until June of 2010, also working on Framework 21 that we submit in September 2009, also working on Framework 22, final action August of September of 2010. So we're basically now talking about three actions, and anything that you want to have in parallel, really, you're talking about September 2010, you know, giving it a lot of attention because there's three actions going on over the next couple of years.
Dave Gatham.
Yes. It will be implicit then in the committee's discussion that, for example, they will consider whether these can legally be done within the time frame allocated and... I mean, there seems to be a huge amount of discussion about number three here, about whether, you know, the whole duck aspect here, whether it's an IFQ or not. And so will the committee have an answer to that question when they meet?
In November, yeah.
I can't answer that question, Dave, whether it's legal or not. I would hope that the committee would consider that when it considers these issues.
Okay. I just would hope that if we vote this up, that the committee will request that information, and if they can't get it, we'll consider that in their deliberations about whether to move forward. I'm very concerned that you're going to spend a lot of time on something that may ultimately turn out to be undoable at this time.
Is the committee going to meet between now and the November meeting?
Yes, the committee is meeting on November 3rd, and at our last committee meeting on September 11th, this issue came up very directly, you know, is this an IFQ or isn't it? And Gene responded the best he could, shooting from the hip, in his opinion, but he had requested time to go back to headquarters and get more advice. I'm just not sure when that would be available.
Gene?
It's not just that. It's how it's... ultimately conceived. If it's conceived in a way where vessels are free to make up any broken trips without restriction, et cetera, then that gets very close to being the functional equivalent of IFQ. If it's setting up trip limits for vessels, but there's no guarantee that they can necessarily achieve their trip limits, in these various, in the open areas, and that's something else again. So it's not just, you know, in part my hesitation to give a definitive answer depends on how the committee wants to set it up. And we didn't really get into the details of that other than conceptually.
Okay. Well, it's clear there's some interest in the, in this item being further developed and discussed at the committee level. And as Gene points out, the devil's in the detail. Anything further? Dee, are you all set? You clear with what this motion says? Okay. Anything further from the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Twelve. Opposed? Four opposed. Motion carries 12-4. Dave or Dee, anything further? Under Scullett?
Yes, there's one more item. It's related to a committee motion from the September 10th, 11th meeting. Documents number 2, 3, and 4 are the relevant documents for this discussion. Just briefly summarize it. Document number 2 is the actual motion from the Scallop Committee meeting. Document number 3, essentially what it is it's a motion from the Scallop Committee requesting the council to consider writing a letter to the Science Center requesting analysis of how the yellowtail incidental catch limit in the scallop access areas is monitored and observed, and essentially how it's then extrapolated out to the fishery, ultimately sometimes leading to a closure. The document the committee considered is document number 3, which is a letter from Fishery Survival Fund that the council received on September 9th, right before that council meeting. This was raised under other business at the council, the committee meeting, and essentially the motion below is what was made. The committee discussed the letter to some degree. There were some very specific suggestions in the letter about, in their opinion, some analyses that were warranted, and the committee discussed them. Ultimately, the committee motion included language that didn't exactly include the same requests from the Fishery Survival Fund letter. They're very similar, but they are a little different. Honestly, both of them are slightly vague in terms of what the actual request is. And the committee ultimately decided that rather than something like this coming from the committee level, it would be better for the full council to consider it. So they wanted to bring this motion to council consideration. If you're interested in a little bit more of the committee discussion, document number 4 on page 14 is the committee meeting summary draft, which is still draft at this point. But on page 14 is the relevant part of this discussion at the very end of the meeting when this was discussed about midway through. On page 14, you'll see some discussion about the original letter. There was some points made out from the audience which almost turned this into a larger issue in terms of bycatch monitoring in general for yellowtail and other species as well, which led to some other SBRM kind of fishery-wide comments and so forth. So that's the background and the different documents you'd want to consider for this agenda item.
Dave, you want to add anything else to that?
No, just to get the discussion on it rolling, I had a motion from the committee that I guess Karen already has up there. I guess that some of these issues I think are generic to the question of sea sampling and how well does it reflect what the entire fleet is doing, but some are specific to the scallop question or scallop observer program because the fishery does, you know, pay for monitoring, and the question is because of how the financing of this works, does that change the behavior of a vessel that's carrying a sea sampler on board, and does that have implications for the yellowtail monitoring? So that's a unique facet of this one that We're persuaded the only way to get to the bottom of it is to have the folks who have control of the data to do the analysis.
Council? Pat? Nancy?
Just very quickly, I think you do need a second, Mr. Chairman. This is by consensus. It wasn't a committee motion, and I know that we didn't necessarily join in that consensus. So.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Odlin. Nancy.
I'm going to reach all the way over here.
We are doing these analyses. We're in the process now of looking at, I know that there's concerns about what's been referred to as an observer effect. I can't say that there's an observer effect or not, but what we are looking at are differences, for example, in length of trips on those trips that have observers versus those that don't. And we're looking at some other parameters as well. And in the discussion that we've had with council staff, it's our view that we'll go ahead and continue doing these analyses and then bring them to the PDT. So as far as some of these questions are concerned in the letter, as I said, much of this is going on in terms of analyses that we're currently conducting, and we're prepared to bring those forward.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. Some of these questions, estimating the yellowtail bycatch, not actually counting, measuring, item number A, is that analysis being done? I mean, that's kind of separate from the observer effect. I mean, yellowtail is a limiting factor in the scallop fishery, and there's not going to be a lot of it available in the future. So to what, sense do you have in doing that analysis?
Yeah, I think that we've been pretty open, I think, in terms of describing what our protocols are relative to developing what the estimates are in terms of actually collecting the data. We intend to go through each of these. I mean, I'm looking at some responses that I've gotten from my folks back in Woods Hole, and we're planning to look at each of these to see what we can provide, like I said, through the PDT process.
Dick?
I just wanted to clarify that, the PDT hasn't seen this letter. These are not requests that the PDT has or even that we'd even have similar questions or concerns. So I just wanted to be clear that we wouldn't actively be requesting this if the agency was going to respond to these. I think that's fine, but I wasn't going to actively do anything about this letter or these different requests from the PDT's perspective.
Okay, Council, the committee's asked us to draft this letter. Anything further on this? Anyone in the audience? Drew.
Drew Minkiewicz, Fisheries Survival Fund. This action is being taken at the, or hopefully being taken at the request of the Fisheries Survival Fund, and the impetus behind it is that there are a lot of concerns when the Nantucket Lightship area was shut down this year because of all the yellowtail quota was caught. And, there's a lack of transparency right now in how that quota is measured and counted. And so this is what we're really trying to get at. The initial request was for the information to be brought to the committee and to the public. I would note that the Scallop PDT, with the exception of two members, or three members, is all NIMS employees. So it would really be NIMS talking to NIMS if you went to the PDT. This is something that really should come to the committee and public. It's about making this process transparent so people understand and how it's being done, can provide insight and critique, because the fact is the fleet looks at the yellowtail bycatch rate, and we should note that yellowtail bycatch in this area was less than 2% of overall catch, yet the area was still shut down early. okay? And some of the numbers just don't add up from what people are looking at. And so there's some real questions on how things are being estimated and how the catch per unit effort of yellowtail to scallops is being calculated. So that just needs to be fleshed out. So we really strongly support this motion and hope the council really just tries to bring transparency to this process. Thank you.
Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious, who is doing the analysis?
We are. You mean in terms of names of people? I mean, our analytical folks in concert with our observer folks, because obviously what we're doing is, as far as the transparency issue is in terms of estimating bycatch, it relates to the protocols that we have now in terms of data collection, and so obviously we're dealing with those directly through the observer program. But as far as any kind of observer effect is concerned, whether that is the case or not, we're doing that with the people that have the analytical skills.
Our concern is there are certain things, obviously, that an analyst, even within the observer program, could do. But on the other hand, we need an audit. I mean, basically, somebody needs to be from the outside coming in, and unfortunately, it can't be an outsider the way things are set up now. We've asked for the data. We can't get it. But there are some real anomalies, and we need somebody that could come in and look at, for example, observer reports to see if, in fact, the observer followed protocols and counted fish versus estimated fish. And it can't be somebody within the observer program doing that. There's also some issues. The regional office does the analysis. There seems to be, there were outliers, for example. There were several outliers, three major outliers in the lightship area in 2006 that drove the closure. This year we heard, again, it's through the grapevine, that when there were 30 boats out fishing, there was one observed trip that was an outlier that was used and applied against the 30 vessels. Who's going to do that analysis to see if, in fact, that's the case and what the sensitivity is to that level of observer coverage versus the level of effort? This is really important because yellowtail now is driving the system. All the other fisheries are going to be under similar types of observer protocols. I mean, we're going to have a huge number of vessels lined up June 14th to run into closed area 2 under the threat of a closure. I mean, we're driving derbies with these methodologies. There aren't enough observers to cover that type of scenario, nor were there enough observers towards the end of this last access period when everybody got afraid that it was going to close. We had a tremendous amount of effort. So there are a lot of issues, and it needs some group or some body that could look at the data objectively where we feel that it's getting a fair review. And I'm just concerned about that. The council should be very concerned about this with the SBRM and all the other data issues. We need some way to make sure we're getting quality data out of the observer program. And this is not saying the observer program is doing a great job. There's no question about it. I have no idea how the analysis are conducted up at the regional office. Kurt had come down and given a presentation to the PDT when we questioned this in 2006. He did point out the three major outliers, but said that's all he could do is get the data from the observer program, and he just has to accept what he gets. He can't really question it. We tried to go back, and we found out working with the observer program that there were people estimating the yellowtail. And since then, the protocol supposedly changed, but it would be good to have somebody come in and audit to make sure, in fact, the protocol did change and that we're getting actual counts. The bigger problem with the yellowtail is its two components. One is the count of the yellowtail, but the other is the estimation of the scallop catch. and we're hearing that there are significant problems in estimating the scallop catch. And because we're using a rate, that becomes a major issue, especially when we're down at dealing with a 1% bycatch rate. So this is an important matter, and the council should really make every effort to, like Drew said, bring transparency to it. Thank you.
Jim Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall of Bedford Seafood Consulting. I want to thank the council for having this motion on the table, and hopefully it will be passed and the work will take place. When we had our first closure based on yellowtail bycatch from one of the access programs, I remember asking the question shortly thereafter, and perhaps it wasn't until the next year when we really got some slammed down. But if I recall correctly, the first time we had discrepancies or differences anyways in the reported bycatch by the vessels, the observed bycatch by the observers, and the extrapolated information that came out in the end. If I remember correctly, the first time, I believe the final estimations of bycatch of yellowtail were three times higher than the observer's data. The following year, I remember asking the same question at that point in time. It was three times higher than the original. I believe it was eight times higher than the reported bycatch. And I had asked that question at that point in time, but apparently it either wasn't taken as seriously as it is being now. And like I say, I'm really glad to see that it is here. And, you know, one of the other issues I tried to raise, and I'm currently in a process of writing a letter asking a question about it, has to do with discard mortality. For all the bycatch that the scallopers are, how little the bycatch the scallopers are given in order to conduct their fishery within these closed areas. Every one of the fish they catch is considered dead because it's being discarded. It's bycatch. My suggestion is if we can't come to terms on this, then maybe we need to mandate that that dead fish be brought ashore so it can be accurately measured. If it's going to shut down a fishery, I think the additional work that would cause the industry or the scallop fishery to bring in these fish may be justified at that point in time. So hopefully this work will go forward and will bring about some satisfactory answers and, as stated before, transparency. If not, then, like I say, why are we wasting dead fish? Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Jim Odlin.
Yeah, I think this was a committee motion, and if it was, you asked for a second, but I don't think you needed to ask for a second.
So I guess it was a statement, a consensus statement.
So you need a second on a consensus?
Hold up, yeah, just to cover our butts,
okay.
Got a second.
No problem. But one other item, and at the bottom of the last sentence it says fish behavior impacts. I think you're trying to get to fishing behavior impacts, but not fish behavior impacts. And I think it may be a typo or something, so we got to fix that.
Is that right, Dave?
Yeah, I think that's right. We weren't trying to model fish behavior. You're right. It's fishermen. Thank you.
Dr. Pierce. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind the industry again, all the industry, that you are entitled to a copy of each and every observed trip on your boat. Anybody who does not request that information and verify its accuracy is doing themselves and the system a serious, injustice. Disservice. I have a whole filing cabinet full of them. I check every one of them. I go through and make sure they got the right species, that the poundage is at least roughly right, and that, you know, the times and whatnot and the places are as I remember them. And I think you should all do that. Everybody should request that. The observer is supposed to carry a form that the boat operator can fill out at the end of the trip requesting it. If they don't have it, you should take down the observer's name and phone number and contact the Science Center to get one of those forms and to report the fact that they didn't offer you one, because they are supposed to do that. You have a right to the unaudited data from your vessel. And if everybody in a given group, as an example, requested all that information, then they could do their own analysis of it, because they'd have it all. So I support the motion. I think, you know, given the situation, we're probably going to have to ask for information, but the information is already available to you if you just ask for it.
Okay, anything further from the council? Sally McGee?
Yeah, I think that that understanding how the information on yellowtail bycatch is being collected and analyzed is good, but it would be helpful to me to understand what the council is, can do, if anything, as far as an idea that was raised sometime in the last month or so about groundfish permits and the potential for scallop permit holders to purchase or lease days or quota from a groundfish permit holder to cover yellowtail bycatch. That's something that was raised. It's just kind of bounced around as far in my mind. It hasn't really landed anywhere, either in groundfish committee or scallop committee, to be fleshed out as a way to deal with the problem that this is getting at but doesn't really solve.
Sally, to that question, council staff has been and will finish or complete a white paper on that issue for the council to look at in November. So everybody's aware it's being worked on. We should see it in November. Anything further on the motion on the board? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Fifteen opposed. Abstentions. One abstention. The motion carries 15-0. One abstention. David D., anything else? On the scallop?
No, I just had one question for Pat that came up earlier. Someone had asked me, and I didn't really know the answer. So we did get a report this morning from George on progress on the Amendment 11 qualifications and so forth for individuals. And the question was, effectively, how does it look for implementation in the beginning of the fishing year in 2009?
I get my update today from Pete, but we are still on track for implementation March 1, 2009. So that's still what we're targeting.
Great, thanks.
Mike Leary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To that point, Pat, how's the monitoring going to come into place in 2009 for the limited access scallops if you get a quota? How is that going to be monitored?
There's no real change. I mean, I can't remember whether the council proposed any new reporting requirements, but we would be monitoring in the same way that we always have been. We're not monitoring for the individuals. They'll be monitoring their own quota. We'll be monitoring to enforce it, but no real change in the current monitoring system.
Anything further? Dave or Dee? That's it for scallops. Okay. I had cut off the open period for public comment earlier today. However, a couple of individuals traveled pretty far to get here to make a quick statement to the council, so I'm going to allow that, seeing as it's